Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Okay, welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I am delighted to be joined today by Kathy Stewart. Kathy is the Vice President of the Senior Living Division with Jeff Harrison Associates. She spent nearly 15 years producing top talent for senior living organizations nationally. Since Kathy began her recruiting career in 2008, she has been the lead recruiter and top biller in the office for that entire time. In fact, that whole time has been with the same firm. She became a Pinnacle Society member in 2018, and that is how I was introduced to Kathy through our mutual friend, Jordan Rayboy. Kathy, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. So how do you know our esteemed colleague, Jordan?
So Jordan and I became acquainted. I mean, everybody knows Jordan, right? All of his videos are out there. And training-wise, we'd always see him, my colleague who owns our firm, Jeff Harris. He would pull up videos with Jordan. And in fact, he was involved in a group with him that working with another trainer, and Jeff introduced himself to Jordan and was talking about how he was wanting to build his company. And I was his first successful hire that he had had. So he was telling the group and telling Jordan about this woman, Kathy, that he had hired, and his son was telling him how to Jeff's son was telling him how to grow the company. He said, "Dad, you just need to hire more Kathys." And Jordan thought that was really funny. And so then, you know, fast forward probably about a year later, we're at a NAPS conference and Jeff is there with me, and we're in one of Jordan's sessions. And Jordan says, you know, he comes up to me after we go up to Jordan after the session, and he introduces me as Kathy. He's like, "Kathy, the Kathy? All right." So we've been friends kind of ever since.
All right. So I'm talking to the Kathy, not just Kathy, the Kathy. All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much. So can you tell me a bit about, like, you've been in recruiting for 15 years. How did you get into it?
So this is actually my third career, I feel like. I have a master's degree in music education. I started teaching in the public schools, then left that when I became a mom and decided to be a stay-at-home mom for a bit. Started a direct home selling business and had no idea. I mean, I just always felt like I could sell, but ended up being very successful, built a multi-million dollar business, recruited people, didn't realize I was recruiting. They called it, sponsoring, right? Right. And so I built this multi-million dollar lineage and then decided, you know, I needed to do something else once my daughter got into kind of that middle school and needed me home more at night. And I read this silly ad online. I just happened to be looking at, you know, sales and marketing things in the area. And I saw this ad that said, if you can sell, you'll always have a job. And I thought, well, that was ridiculous. I can sell anything. So I Googled up the company. It was 3 minutes from my house. And I called the guy, and this guy answers the phone. "Hello, this is Jeff." And I said, "Jeff Harris? The Jeff Harris?" Kind of like the cat. He said, "Yep, it's just me." And I started cackling and I went over there and that was it. And I've been recruiting ever since. So it's been a perfect fit for me. One of the things that I, I feel like as a teacher, really that's about sales, where if I can sell music to middle school students, I can sell anything. If I can sell candles in somebody's living room and make a huge income, I can sell anything. But what that those two things taught me was really the importance of being able to listen. And with regard to the direct home selling piece, the importance of lots of phone calls to be able to build and do whatever you need to do. So there's this metrics that you have to follow, and it really works. And all of that transitioned into being successful as a recruiter. So I always tell people, if you're looking to hire people, find people that were really successful in direct home sales because they know how to recruit. They know how to make phone calls all the time. They don't mind being on the phone.
Oh, that is so awesome. I don't think we've ever had a music teacher on the show before. That's cool.
I sing opera. And
do you really?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. That's awesome. I do know a guy who was a trainer, not in the recruiting industry. He was a leadership trainer, and his hobby was opera singing. But
it's my hobby. I don't really sing much anymore, but love to sing nonetheless, always for fun.
That is so cool. And so then you went into direct home selling again, which is, I mean, totally get how that's transferable to recruiting. And that's not a background that I see many firm owners exploring in terms of a talent pool. And I don't know why. That's, now that you've explained it, it makes total sense.
Yeah. And I don't mean just because there's a huge turnover rate in direct home selling in general. But if you're looking at the people who are those higher level vice president, you know, RVPs, whatever, higher level people who have built successful lineages, those people know how to recruit. That's what they're doing.
Right. Yes. All right. No, that's interesting. So could you say a little bit about then how you went about building the senior living, your success in that particular niche?
Yep, our firm specializes in senior living. So these are communities that that seniors retire to. They're typically higher end communities. They have independent living, assisted living, skilled nursing, all on the same campus. There's a lot of senior living out there. There's a lot of care when it comes to seniors, but there's this little teeny tiny niche that we are in, which is these high end retirement communities. And I mean, I kind of started there. I started in 2008, right as everything was hitting the fan.
That was not the best timing.
But I didn't know any different. I mean, that's the thing. I came in and it was like, oh, well, instead of 7-1, it was 10-1 from, you know, debrief to placement ratio. Or, I mean, we've even had it down to 5-1 back in 2016, 2017. But, so I came in, we made this tack when everything hit the fan to do less on that regional and corporate level role, because that's where all of the positions were being cut, and really focus on those strategic positions that are in the communities that require licensure that you got to have. So, I mean, I think, you know, people are talking about now there's always, you've got a recession on the way, or some people are already in recession, and in healthcare, it's a little different because there's always a need for healthcare, and we've got baby boomers that are retiring. And so this tends to be a growing field. We've grown our office now to, I think there are probably 9 of us total recruiting in the office, but we're all in that little one specialty niche.
Wow. That's amazing. So you've got 9 people just working in that one niche. That's brilliant. And so looking back over the last 15 years, what are you most proud of having accomplished?
So for me, I think I told you this. I don't see myself as like this super special, awesome person. I just think that I'm really good at the basics. I think that mindset is probably the key things that maybe sets me apart from a lot of recruiters. I have this winning mindset. I think that I'm winning all the time. I feel like Everything is going well, even when it's not. And if it doesn't go well, then what's the lesson here? And it doesn't mean that you kind of throw on your rose-colored glasses and ignore things. It just means that you have to be willing to accept responsibility and say, okay, what can I learn from this and how can I grow? And I think that that is, we tend to, you know, we ride this big roller coaster all the time and it feels like everything is like really great or really awful. When the reality is, if we just focus on being consistent and keeping our mindset positive, you're going to move. You're going to move forward. And I mean, I feel like that that's kind of what has kept me in the game as long as I have and kept me successful as long as I have been. And you know, I'm not this gigantic million-dollar biller, although, you know, I built my team consistently is pulling 850 to a million plus in billing, total billing. For me, I'm, you know, anywhere 400,000, 500,000, 600,000, depending on the year. And I try not to even really think about it because if you get focused on that money end of things, then you start riding the roller coaster, right? And that's where, if you just focus on every single day, what you need to get done every single day and know what your metrics are, everything works out.
So you're focusing on the process rather than the outcome.
Yep.
I get that. And wow, you said a lot there. So let me just break it down a little bit. 100% agree. Mindset is everything. And, you know, you absolutely have to stay positive. And otherwise you wouldn't have longevity in this business, right? I think a lot of people who come into the industry and then leave again, good people, like maybe even good salespeople and, you know, who've been successful in other industries potentially, but just the constant highs and lows, setbacks, disappointments, people saying one thing and doing another or taking a different direction than you were hoping or expecting. And I think you definitely need to be, you know, as you say, consistent and stay positive no matter what is happening. Otherwise you would just,
well, you have to think about recruiting as like a doctor. So people say doctors are practicing medicine, right? So it doesn't mean they're practicing just to get better, but I mean, that kind of is, they're practicing to get better. Nobody's ever, you never stay where you are. You never learn at all. And so I feel like that this as a profession is one of those types of practices where you're never perfect. I fail all the time. I mean, I do dumb things with candidates and clients all the time, but I always take the opportunity to learn from that and use this as an opportunity to grow as a person, to hone my skill. You have to realize that in recruiting, you're going to super suck for 6 months to a year. I mean, 6 months, you're really super sucking. The second 6 months, okay, you're starting to get your feet, but you're not really good at this until you're, I mean, 2 years down the road before you feel kind of confident in what you're doing. It was 2 years before I said, okay, I got this. And you just have to trust in that process. It was 5 years before I felt like, woo, yeah, I'm great, you know? And it took 5 years before I got to that place where I was able to feel like I could impart what my skill set was to help build other people. And I feel like that's kind of what has made me successful, is just kind of sticking with it.
I'm so glad you said that, Kathy, because what you're talking about, 5 years, like if you think of any other profession, there's some kind of apprenticeship or training process, like whether it's medicine or law or, you know, anything that is requires a either a technical skill or a level of sophistication, experience, knowledge to perform it successfully. It just doesn't happen overnight. You have to work at it for a number of years. And so I love how you broke it down into the first 6 months, second 6 months, and then 5 years before you really hit your stride. But I want to go back to this idea of mindset because, and you've given a hint in terms of looking for what can I learn, but Could you elaborate on how you stay positive and how you maintain that mindset? Because I think everyone would agree, yes, we need to be positive, but how? Like, what's your recipe or your process for being able to create that within yourself?
So I've first of all, I think that some of it is just kind of an innate positiveness that I have in life. But how do you create that positiveness? I mean, I think a lot of it is about being passionate about the niche that you're in. I mean, I feel like is something that I love seniors. I mean, my grandparents were the greatest people on this planet. And I have never had that ability to be a nurse. I can't do body fluids, but if I could have, I would have. But I love seniors so much that I want to be able to help find people that take care of them. So that's, you know, that's kind of an underlying thing. It's just being passionate. I think that the being able to stay positive is really about gratitude. You can't feel anxiety and negativeness when you feel gratitude. So if ever I'm feeling that, you know, oh, you know, something terrible happens, whatever, you lose a deal, something falls apart, something, you know, you have a fall off, somebody takes a counteroffer, you got to allow yourself to kind of feel that disappointment. But then, okay, what can I learn? What could I do better? But then be grateful for what it is that you learned, and be grateful that for your client, this wasn't the right person, clearly. And it's okay. You can make mistakes. Just get back up on that horse and do it again. So I think gratitude is one of the things. I am always just one of those big persons that just says, hey, these are the three things that I'm grateful for every single day. As far as, you know, this is actually outside of recruiting, but in relationships, and recruiting is all about relationships. My husband and I, years ago, before we even got married, we every night would sit down at the end of the evening and we say, can I tell you three things that I appreciate about you? And just feeling that gratitude, knowing that you're expressing gratitude and feeling gratitude from someone else, that really helps build that feeling of positiveness and feeling good about who you are. I think positivity is you know, being optimistic and thinking forward thinking. I think it's helpful to remind yourself of all the things that you want to do and the things that you've accomplished in life that make you successful. I have little index cards all over in front of me here that have little positive sayings. I'm going to win. Remember who you are. You know, you're in Pinnacle. You've billed over $1 million in team billing. Every action is a vote for who you want to become. I mean, you are worth money. These are all things that sit in front of me all the time. So I think when you put that, and that's what you're always seeing, I have $1 million bills on my wall over here. Like just little mind tricks that kind of help me remember that I just to be myself because I'm great who I am.
Love it. I love that, Kathy. So let me try and recap, because you shared so many different ideas and strategies in order to build that positive and resilient mindset. The fundamental one, which I think is the starting point, you said passion and that you love seniors. And so really, to me, that's about your purpose and your why. If you have a strong enough purpose and yes, you believe in the value and the importance of what you're doing, that is
carries you through.
You can do anything, right?
Right.
So I think that is, as your foundation, is awesome. Building on that, I don't know if you've read Grit by Angela Duckworth.
Yes, I love Grit.
So yeah, so she says grit, which is kind of the common quality of successful people in every field, is a combination of passion plus perseverance. So it's feeling passionate about your topic or your, you know, in whatever you're pursuing, and sticking with that over the long term and kind of really not deviating from that. And that's what you're describing with like the 6 months, 12 months, 5 years, and now 15 years, you've been in the same niche with the same firm. I mean, that is the definition of perseverance. So you've combined, you've got the grit layered on top of the purpose and the kind of belief in why you're doing what you're doing. And then to get you through the kind of highs and lows, what it sounds like you're doing is asking really good questions. And I love the example you gave of your, with your relationship with your husband, of saying like what you appreciate about someone. And you mentioned about gratitude. This is something I learned from Tony Robbins, like when I was, I don't know, 16 or something. And I still every day use these power questions to put yourself in the right frame of mind and in a state of peak performance. So, you know, when you have a challenge or a setback, you know, after you, of course, it's okay to feel bad temporarily, right? Because that's normal.
You gotta feel it.
But when you're ready,
like
to
when you're going through
that,
hell, go through hell. Don't stay in there, right? Just keep walking.
Right, exactly. Go through it and get to the other side. And so questions like, you know, okay, what can I learn from this? That's a good one that you mentioned
exactly.
already. How could I use this, or what's actually good about this? Maybe, well, you know, if it's a counteroffer, I'm glad I know now instead of after they've started with my client and then they end up leaving in the first, you know, 2 months or something. Or how could this benefit me, or how can I grow from this? Or, you know, what do I have to feel grateful for right now if I wanted to feel that? So you're using those questions to just instantly reframe the situation, get yourself in a different emotional state. And you mentioned challenge a couple of times. There's a fantastic speaker, and now I can't think of his name, but he was a trainer for Tony Robbins, and I've seen him speak a few times. His last name is Tom McCarthy. Okay, mm-hmm. Tom McCarthy. Do you know Tom McCarthy?
I don't know him. No.
Okay, so he's based in California, but I've seen him speak over here in London. And he's got a great mantra that I like, which is every challenge is an opportunity for me to improve my mental toughness. So if nothing else, even if there's really nothing I can learn and there's really no benefit, like you've gone through those good questions, like what's good about this? How could I benefit from this? What can I learn from this? And the answer is still nothing. Well, at least I have an opportunity to improve my mental toughness. And so therefore, that's something positive that's coming out of this.
Yeah,
sorry,
absolutely.
Kathy, I just went on a long
exactly the case. And I think that, you know, even on a basic phone call for a new recruiter coming in, it's, you know, what's good about the call? What's not good about the call? But we always have to look at what's good about the call first, because there's something that you can, that you've done good. And you want to kind of build on each positive. It's like when you're talking to someone that you want to get a yes as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So you want to get that affirmation, something that is good out of everything. And then, okay, well, what could I have done better? Those are all positives. So yeah.
Awesome. We've touched on mindset, and you, in a previous conversation, you mentioned to me that your superpower, you've got a superpower when it comes to influence. Could you say more about
that? Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I love to say everyone has superpowers. They just don't even know it. And for me, I'm a DISC profiler. So I do a lot with understanding personality profiles based on this DISC profile, D being dominant, I being influencers, S being supportive, and C being cautious. And so when you look at the circle of everybody, you've got D's, if you put everybody on a circle, the top half of the circle are fast-paced people, the bottom half of the circle are slower paced. One is not better than the other, it just is what it is. And then on the right side of the circle, you have people-oriented, you have task-oriented on the left side. So D temperaments, direct doers, movers, shakers, decisive, dominant people. Those are fast-paced, task-oriented people. And I'll just quickly, I want to tell you what these are, because there's a it's important to understand who each of these are and what they are, so that you know that communicating with each one of these is very different. So you've got those fast-paced, task-oriented people, direct, doer, dominant people. You've got fast-paced, people-oriented people, influencers, fun-loving, inspiring people. You've got slower-paced people that are your sweet, supportive team players, peacekeepers. And then you've got task-oriented, slower-paced people who are cautious, a little bit more calculating, detail-oriented, very systems-oriented. They also tend to be very correct. and so each one of these requires a different communication style. And so as someone who studied this, first of all, I know that I'm an IDDI temperament person. So I'm fast paced. I'm an influencer. I connect well with people. I'm a getter done.
Gee, Kathy, I would have never guessed.
No, I know. Right. I'm a getter done kind of person. And if I just approached the world from that point of view, then I would be alienating these people that are maybe a little bit more slower paced. If I'm primarily an I temperament influencer, inspiring, fun loving person, and I'm all about fun and people, I'm really not paying attention well to the people that are more task oriented. So I have to, as a superpower, I have to be able to kind of know who I am, but know what these other people need in order for me to communicate more effectively with them. So when I talk to somebody, and you can tell oftentimes by the pace that they're talking in the conversation, if they are quick, decisive kinds of comments, they're not really asking good questions, they're just answering short answers, you're probably dealing with a task-oriented person. If they're asking lots and lots of detailed questions, you're probably dealing with a C temperament person. If they're that easy, fun person to talk to, and you could talk all day, and if you lived in Greensboro, North Carolina, we'd go have a glass of wine or something, that might be another I temperament that you're talking to, or somebody who just really loves the people that they work with, and they're all about, you know, their team. That's more of an S temperament. So if I'm dealing with that, I want to make sure that I am providing the right answers to them. I want to make sure that I'm talking to a D temperament as somebody who is providing what they need. They're motivated by winning. So I want to make sure that I'm giving them information that talks about how they can win in this job. If I am talking to an I temperament, it is all about how you can influence and help an organization build and grow, and you're going to be that leader. I temperaments love to lead. If I'm talking to somebody that's a more sweet, supportive person, you would be an integral part of the team with this person. You're going to be building a team of people that are going to be in lockstep with one another. You also, and then with C people, we have to be able to provide lots of detail for those people. You can also tell who someone is based on their resume. When you get one of those resumes that are lots and lots of like 100 bullet points, that's somebody who tends to be more C temperament. If in the bullet points they're talking about their big wins, their big accomplishments, those tend to be more dominant people. Influencers might just have those a few flashy things up, and they're also have all kinds of pictures and things on their resumes, the extra little things that make their resumes look fun and colorful. Those tend to be more I temperament people, and S temperaments just tend to be very detailed about not tons of detail, but good enough detail that shows that they're a team player. So I think really providing insight, if you can figure out who you're talking to, you can figure out what their needs are, which helps influence them into conversation with you. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And so I'm curious, Kathy, is this something which you're consciously thinking about when you're working with people, or is it so kind of ingrained that you do it instinctively?
I would say it's it's probably ingrained at this point. I started working with DISC personality stuff when I was in direct time sales, because we were learning about this and how people, you sell to people differently based on what their personality is. So
makes sense.
So from a recruiting standpoint, that's what we're doing. We're inviting people into conversation, but it has to be conversation that meets them. So pacing, mirroring back what they're saying, creating a similar pacing, listening to the kinds of questions that they're asking will help you determine what their personality profile, what their primary personality profile is. And you'll just need to make sure that you're tailoring what you're saying and providing to them to encourage them along the process, even into the interviewing process. If I know that I've got someone who's really more about process, I want to make sure that I tell my client, you know, this person is going to be really interested. If you're interested in this person, we need to really talk about processes and what things are in place to help make them successful. Everybody wants to be successful, but it's in their own way, right? So am I following the rules? Are rules set out for me? Do I have the ability to change the rules? Is this a supportive team? Who is going to be there? How are we having fun? How are we interacting as a team? How people interact is really important in an interview for people-oriented people. And they need to feel that warmth and connection. So if you're dealing with a hiring manager that you know is not particularly warm and fuzzy, but you've got somebody coming in that is warm and fuzzy, then I need to be able to prep that hiring manager to say, hey, this is somebody who's really people-oriented. I know we love their background. I know we've already had some initial conversations with them, but in order to build that relationship, in order to build that trust with them so that they're as excited about this opportunity, you've got to build that relationship. So it's just helpful kind of being able to clue our clients into what they need to do also in that interview process to help make their time successful with people as well. I like to think about it like this. So people that are task oriented, in order to help them say yes, you have to build the trust with them in order to build the relationship. And how do you build trust? You do what you say you're going to do. You show process. You show that there's a path for success. On the people-oriented side of things, you have to build relationship in order to build trust. So it has to be about connection and culture and the people and those things and how people feel working there. I had a candidate ask me say something the other day about, they're in an interview and they asked the question of the, you know, how does it feel working with someone? And when somebody says, how does it feel? You need to go ding, 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 people oriented. Okay. Right. So then I told my client, this is a very people oriented person. We want to make sure that you're making them feel, like you like them, like they're comfortable and that this is going to be a fun time to work with them if they come on board, when they come on board. And that is what happened in the interview, the final interview. And we ended up being able to bring that person on board, but it took, that person's not always they're not always warm and fuzzy. So you need to know you're working with somebody that potentially requires a little bit of warm and fuzzy. So
this is awesome. You're looking at this in a whole nother, there's a whole nother layer to what you're doing here.
Right? I told you, it's a superpower.
Yeah, I can see that. So there's what people say and do, but then it's understanding what sort of person they are and what motivates them and then how you can influence. So you gave some clues, like obviously how they've done a resume, how they speak, words they use. But how do you incorporate this into your recruiting process? Do you actually do profiles on all your candidates, or is it more intuitive?
I just, for, When we're doing retained search work, we are doing disc profiles on our finalist candidates. So I have a little bit more information there, but in contingent recruiting, it's really just, you know, talking with them and hearing what they're saying. And if they're saying things about how they feel, they tend to be more people oriented. If they're talking about, if they're asking questions about lots of processes, they tend to be more task oriented. And so just kind of knowing people versus task, it Got helps it. Me, even if I'm just looking at the basic side of things, people versus task oriented. I know that people are motivated by different things, and you know, D temperament people are motivated by winning. So I need to be able to show them how to win. I temperament people are motivated by being liked in their image, right? So how are they going to look? In to that's really important to an I temperament is their ability to, how are they going to impress and be seen, so to speak. And S temperament people tend to like being wanting to be a part of a team and be in a peaceful environment. So if you've got a real rocky kind of environment with a client, you're probably, you know, S temperaments might not be the best person for that. So really kind of knowing what you're looking for, you know, as far as a company and what the kind of role is that you're looking for, you don't want to put somebody who's a quiet, team-oriented, peacekeeper kind of person in with a really rocky kind of environment, because they're not going to be successful. They're not going to be happy. So just knowing that personality, you need to be able to be aware of that when you're recruiting the right kind of candidate for your client.
That makes total sense. You've actually, can I segue, because you've touched on a topic I did want to explore with you, which is contingency versus retained.
Yep.
Sounds like you do a bit of both. What is your business model and why?
So we started out completely contingent. And I mean like totally contingent and no money down, nothing up front, just, you know, hire us, we'll find your people. And then we switched to, we still offer that, but we offered still contingent, but what we call a priority search, where you put some money down and that's just skin in the game for both of us. It gives you more of a guarantee. We guarantee a minimum of three candidates within 15 business days, extends the guarantee of the candidate when you hire to 90 days. That's our basic priority. But then, of course, we also do retained search. We've started to do that a lot more. In fact, I think I was mentioning to you, I am really switching to, at this point, I'm kind of done with the contingent.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't blame you.
I mean, because you win, you lose. I mean, that it really is more of a roller coaster. And in down times, people... it's easier to do that contingent search. You can always find people who will do that, because your ability to be successful, I've been successful. So people are going to hire me to work with them because I've been successful in that contingent model. But with a retained search, we're doing a lot more. We're the person that is we are vetting everybody from start to finish, including people that come through the client, and giving everybody that same platform to be vetted through, and then providing finalist candidates. It's a lot more on our end of things, but it's guaranteed money. I mean, the contract is a third up front, a third when we deliver your finalist candidates, and a third at the end. And I'm just tired of, you know, doing a lot of work and having my recruiters that work with me doing lots of work and not winning 100%. So, I mean, just sliding into that retained model is the direction awesome. That I want to go. So that's what I'm doing.
Fantastic, Kathy. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, I figured out probably about 3 years into my recruiting career that I was not going to be as successful as I wanted to be in a contingency environment, because I was too slow. Like in recruiting, I mean, speed does make a difference, but I got so frustrated when I would do everything properly and follow the process, you know, reach out to the candidate, vet them thoroughly, tell, you know, sell the opportunity, get them interested, and then, you know, present them to the client. The client would say, oh, Mark, we've already got this CV. I'm like, but he's not talked to anyone else. And the other recruiter just, you know, sent the CV first and to see if the client's interested. And if they are, then they would interview the candidate. I just thought that was totally unfair that, that they would get paid even though I would. And then the candidate was interested because I was the one who sold the job to them.
Correct.
Anyway, so I was kind of on a quest to figure out, you know, how, but I wasn't fully aware of like the retain model and how it works, but I just felt really frustrated with the contingency model. And then I luckily had a manager who mentored me because he'd come from a firm where they did do a lot of retain search. And that was like a light bulb moment for me. And I just, I absorbed everything he could give me like a sponge. Yep. And at first I was really bad at it and I wasn't that successful at persuading clients to give me money up front. But like you, I'm pretty persistent and have that perseverance. And I just really believed in it. I knew that's the direction I wanted to go. And then eventually I figured it out. But
well, and I think, you know, the happy medium is that retainer, people call it, you know, we call it a priority search. Because it, to me, if they put money down, you know, $5,000 down, then there's a little bit of skin in the game. Getting some exclusivity is very helpful. I mean, I've had clients that, you know, I've done contingent search with and they've kind of screwed me two or three times and I'm like, never again. So we switched into a priority search with them. And then I had this happen just recently where they, you know, I still did a priority search with them. They still ended up hiring on their own. When you, it's like, if you get a wait, if there, here's the secret, time kills all deals. So if there's a wait, that's it. Like, that's it. If you're getting any kind of wait anywhere in the process, forget about it. You're not going to win. Right. So, so anyway, and ended up getting a wait and he ended up hiring somebody else. I'm like, damn it, I'm not doing this again. And he reached out to me again and, said, can you help? And I said, it's retained. I'm sorry. A third up front, a third when I deliver and a third at the end, that's it. And all candidates go through me. And he's like, okay.
Hilarious. Yes. I love it. And do you know the difference?
I mean,
exactly. Like you had decided this is the only way I'm going to work here.
I'm not going to work with you. If you're, you know, it doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. I mean, there are clients that are really great and you can work with them on that kind of retainer model where you get a little bit up front and then the rest at the end if they hire, but they're still able to hire on their own. And I find that, you know, probably they'll hire at least one out of three, sometimes two out of three times. And it's not because I'm not doing a great job or getting them candidates. It's just that it's from a financial perspective, they would rather hire someone who is less, maybe even a less qualified for the job, but not have to pay $25,000-$30,000 on a fee. So I get it. But but if you're going to hire a recruiter, then let them do the job. You know, it's really frustrating. I find contingent search, the older I am, and now I'm old in contingent search. trust me. Yep. It's,
I don't believe it.
I mean, really, no, I am, you know, and I think that, just kind of recognizing where it is that you want to go and having that vision as a recruiter, I think I've matured into, you know what, I'm tired of the, you know, not getting paid when we work really hard and I want to be able to provide value, but there has to be some level of respect on the other end of it too. And, so that just means I may need different clients, which that's what retained search is. It's not necessarily, although sometimes you do have your old clients that will say, yeah, I'll work retained with you. It's really about going out and getting new clients, which is, that's scary for a lot of recruiters. And that's, I mean, I think that that's also for me, that's been one of my, one of the things that's made me successful is my ability to go out and market and not be afraid to talk to new clients. And I think I mentioned, I had 1 year, it was probably 2017, had a great year. But I had two clients that were the bulk of my billing, like $750,000 in billing between two different clients. And it evaporated at the end of the year. Like somebody left and then they made a policy change. Another company made a policy change, totally changed courses. And I'm like, holy crap. I literally, like, 2/3 of what my income would have been evaporated. And I had to go out and rebuild, just develop completely new clients. And it's just a matter of going out and, again, using that tenacity and not giving up and showing your worth and what you've done and making those relationships build.
Kathy, what year was this?
I think it was 2017. That was 17, that, or okay. 17 or going into 18. Might have been 2017. So, yeah.
It's so funny because, not that that experience was funny at all. I didn't mean it that way. I meant it's such a common thing that we see. In fact, I just published an episode with my colleague Leanne where we talk about how we see so many recruiters have all their eggs with a couple of clients and, you know, are relying on that repeat business and you know, some referrals and aren't focusing on marketing and business development. And that, you know, it's just a huge vulnerability because all it, you know, if you have most of your billings with one or two clients, then, and they leave through no fault of yours, then that just leaves a huge gaping hole in your projections of what you were planning on producing that next year. So what did you do to turn that around?
So interestingly, I went to this was another NAPS conference that I went to, and Tom Erb had a presentation where he did 12 touches in 10 weeks. And I kind of took that and modified it a little bit for me, but it was a combination of old school snail mail and phone calls and emails. And it was just a process that I literally mailed people things about me and followed up on, I want to introduce myself and talk a little bit about our firm and what we do and how we could provide some benefit for your organization. And if you start with even just 50 people, I mean, that was, to me, that's what I did. I started with 50 people, 50 contacts, 50 organizations that I wanted to build business with. And then I found out who the hiring manager was, the CEO, executive director, whoever, mailed them something in the mail, which nobody does, in handwritten, you know, so that they opened it. It wasn't a label, right? And it looked more personalized. And personal letters inside, personal notes inside, emailed, called. And within by the time I got to step four, I had more business than I could shake a stick at. Then,
wow, that's
so I
awesome.
Never ever, I mean, I credit Tom Urban helping me, you know, this process was a really great process, but by the time, if you're good at it and you have some semblance of decency about you as a person on the phone, yes, then you will have more business than you can shake a stick at. So yeah,
love
you
it.
Should call Tom and have him on and talk about that 12 touches in 10 weeks because it really is a great little process.
It's a great book. I've got it on my shelf here actually because it was recommended to me by one of our clients. And I 100% endorse this approach. I first learned about it like Tom Erb has taken. Has applied this to the recruiting and staffing industry. But going back probably 20 years, I got training from another sales trainer called Chad Holmes, who's now passed, unfortunately. But his book is still available. It's called The Ultimate Sales and Marketing Machine by Chad Holmes. Check it out because you start out with your list of your dream 100 customers. So you said 50, right?
50, but right.
It's however you identify. And by the way, you being a niche specialist is the starting point. You didn't,
right?
Like we'd already talked about that, but you're a niche specialist. And when within your market, you identify who are the 20, 50, 100 like organizations that would be the best potential partners for us that we would love to win as clients. and then build a multi-step sales process, sales and marketing campaign of outreach, which is going to combine multiple different channels. So snail mail, email, phone calls, videos, invitations to events, you know, whatever it takes, right? But you've got multiple steps.
Yep.
And so in Tom Herb's case, he uses 12 steps as an example. It's just so effective.
Yeah. Well, I think somebody says it takes 7 times for somebody to remember your name. So if you're leaving one message, even 2 messages, they're still not going to remember you. You really have to have multiple ways. And that, as a teacher, so this goes back to my teaching stuff, learning modalities and how people take in information. That's a whole nother superpower. it is knowing whether they're visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. And so you have to make sure that in your process, you're hitting all of those areas. They need to see something visual. They need to hear your voice. They need to feel something in their hands. And that way you're hitting everybody's intake of information. So that's a whole nother teacher thing.
Genius. Yeah, no, that's right. Because when you were talking about DISC earlier, I was thinking about visual, auditory, or kinesthetic and those different modalities of processing information in the world. So that's interesting. I hadn't thought of the parallel there with the multi-step.
Yeah, when you're marketing, you have to be able to hit all of those things too. So. Yeah. Because you don't know how people take in information best. And once you discover that, it's kind of like, how do you communicate best with a client? How do they, you ask, is it better for me to email you? Is it better for me to text you? Are you better with calls? I mean, it's just kind of asking those questions so that you're communicating the way that they're asking to be, the way that they need to be communicated best with.
Totally. Absolutely. And so from that point, Kathy, where you lost those 2 big accounts to, building things back up, how can you just talk me through? I mean, you told me your action plan, you went to an apps conference, you bought into the Tom Herb 12 steps process, you executed that. And you said, like, before you knew it, you had tons of business again. But could you just elaborate on that?
Well, I ended up building 9 new clients out of those 50 that I targeted. And I will say, and a lot of people are like this, 95% of what we do in this firm is repeat business because we have a reputation. People trust us. We get the job done. But I had to build new clients. But I wasn't building a new database. I'm not building a new, we're still looking for executive directors and directors of nursing and administrators and directors of sales and marketing. So our network was the same. It's just a matter of, let me help you and let me help your organization. I've done it with these organizations, love to help build with your organization. And so it's just a matter of doing the job. And there are certain jobs that you can fill faster than others. And so I tend to focus on those. If I'm in a place where I really need quick wins, I'm going to do a director of nursing search all day long, because as soon as I can get a director of nursing hired in a matter of days, because they're so sought after, particularly now, right? In dealing with a pandemic, this is it's a niche it's difficult. But because I'm really good at it and know this market and how to recruit those kinds of candidates, then I'm who you want to work with.
Love it. Thank you for sharing your pitch as well, because that makes total sense. Like, you've got a track record, you've helped, all these other clients to accomplish those goals. And why wouldn't they want to benefit from that network and that experience that you've already built up?
And I would say too, if you're a new recruiter and you're working with a firm, just because you don't have experience doesn't mean that you can't sell yourself as experienced, because you're selling the experience of the firm. So our firm does this. We've done this. We, you know, so you don't feel like just because you're a new recruiter or that you are not going to have the same leverage that I do. You can use the firm and the experience of the firm and the people around you. You know, like I'll have a new recruiter working with me on something, and they're in their first month or so, and you know, I recruit with Kathy Stewart. I don't know if you know her. She's been doing this for 15 years. And so, blah, 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 you know, so they're using me, you know, they might use me, or if it's not me, they're using the firm. There's a way to project yourself as having that kind of expertise, even if you don't have it. It's fine.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. You sell the firm's credentials instead of your own personal experience. Beautiful. So listen, is there anything that you had wanted to talk about today that we haven't covered?
I wanted to make sure that we touched on kind of creating your own dream life, because work-life balance to me is something that's really important. And I know that people really strive to create that work-life balance in their life. And I think just as a recruiter, we tend to kind of be all encompassed in our jobs and work really hard. We have to make calls at night and on the weekends and things like that. But I think it's really important to set some guidelines for yourself, because you've got to recharge yourself. So I mean, more than just creating the systems to be successful as a recruiter, I think that you have to create the systems in your life to be able to provide recharge time. I work really hard Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday is usually about a half day for me, maybe 2/3 of a day. And Friday is either all the way off or half day.
Wow, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and neither would my clients really, because I do keep up with email, things like that, but I'm not on the phone then, right? And on the weekends are my time. And if I need to make a phone call, I can make a phone call. But in general, I'm not feeling like that I need to schedule a bunch of things. And I just feel like it's really important to make sure that you're looking at your own time as recharge time, so that you can be as successful as possible in the time when you're plugged in.
I love it. So what's your secret, Kathy? Because I think that sounds hugely appealing. And especially because what you're saying is you're working basically 3.5 to 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. And yet you're still creating an incredible lifestyle. You're still producing at a high level. You're still serving your clients effectively. So how have you created those boundaries and that balance?
You know, when I first started recruiting, I told Jeff, I said, I gotta stop at 5 o'clock. Like, if I have to make a phone call, I can make a phone call, but I'm done. And I need to be able to pay attention to my family at the end of the day. So, I mean, that was kind of going in, that was my stop. It's kind of why I don't do a lot. I do West Coast searches, but not often, because I'm one of those people that likes to go to bed at 9 o'clock at night at East Coast time, which means, you know, that's only 6 o'clock on the West Coast. So I have to kind of, you know, I pick and choose where I work because of my bedtime.
Fair enough. Sleep is important.
It really is. No. I agree. And so I think that, for me, I created those boundaries by making sure that my family knows that they're first and foremost. And that work knows that I'm going to give you 100% while I'm there. And then, but I have to have my time off. But I also at every year, do a kind of an assessment of where I am across my life. And, you know, I don't even know who the person is. And it might be a Tony Robbins thing where you have the life wheel where you,
the wheel of life.
Yeah. And so you've got like these 8 areas within your life that you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. And then you put into place the things that you want to keep and do, and you just schedule it in. So Monday is a riding day for me. I ride horses. So Monday afternoon, I'm leaving and I'm going to the barn because that's important. And at the barn, there's no phone on a horse. You can't be on a horse, right? And have a phone. It doesn't work, right? So that's, you know, I imagine
texting and riding a horse might be dangerous.
It's terrible. Oh, sorry. My dog's back there barking.
That's all right.
My office dog. And I, Tuesday nights, my husband he does something on Tuesday nights. And so I'm free on Tuesday. I can actually work a little bit later on Tuesdays. I can be flexible. Wednesdays, I have an hour of dog training. So, I mean, I just make sure that I'm scheduling the things that are important that are going to fall into the things that are outside of work. I mean, I can be a 10 at work and say, I'm doing all of the great things that I can do at work. But if I'm not being a 10 in my relationships, in my leisure time, if I'm not managing my money and not saving or putting money in my 401k, if I'm not balanced in all these other areas, I'm not really going to be a 10 in that. And part for me, part of that was, I decided it's been almost a year. It's almost 11 months now. I stopped drinking.
Awesome.
Not because I, you know, like, oh my gosh, I'm drunk every night and I can't function. No, it was that, Danny Cahill did a presentation and his brother who has since passed asked him, have you ever given 100% of your life? And I mean, to something in your life. And Danny thought about it and he said, you know, I would hope that I do that every day. And his brother said, you know, I don't know if I ever did. And I thought about it. And I thought, gosh, am I giving 100% all the time? And I thought, you know, I'm not all the time because I'm drinking at night, you know, a couple glasses of wine, not gobs, not to the point where I'm, you know, falling down and not able to function, but to the point where, you know, I'll answer that email another time or, nah, I think I'm not going to make that call tonight. And I just thought, you know, I'm not giving 100%. And it was a really difficult transition for me to make that decision because my whole family drinks. Yeah. And everybody around me drinks, but I just decided for my better part of me, I needed to make that happen. So that's what we did. And it's just been really freeing. And it's given me a lot more energy to do other things outside of work and to be more focused on work when I'm at work than that.
That is awesome, Kathy. And Jordan spoke to me a little bit about
we have an accountability group.
And he was pretty excited about that. So, and by the way, the Wheel of Life exercise is a good one. If you just Google Wheel of Life, you'll find there's a little, like you can
fill
out a picture and it gives you an instant visual snapshot of how balanced you are in different dimensions of your life. And so that's so cool that you identified one area that you felt that you weren't playing full out, you weren't being a 10, and you weren't showing up as you wanted to be, and you made that change even though it was difficult. And so that's awesome, Kathy. I appreciate you, and I'm grateful that you came on the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.